Hello and welcome to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News Juno. It's Wednesday, October 9th. I'm Joan Pardis. Jeff Brown is at the board. He's the engineer and producer of the show. We've got an interesting show. Jeff Kirsch is here to talk about Juno Douglas Little Theater's workshops this weekend. Sally Smith and Scarlett Adam will be here to put us in the mood for holiday music, and we'll learn how to navigate the Affordable Care Act with Crystal Borland. And we'll find out what's going on along Egan Drive with guest John Garvey from Ever Electric. That, Writer's Almanac, music, and more. Stay tuned.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. First Nations across Canada are marking the 250th anniversary of the Royal Proclamation. As Dan Karpenchuk reports, it was the first time the British Crown recognized Aboriginal title.
Native leaders in Canada agree that the Royal Proclamation of 1763 is important because it is fundamental to the legal framework for First Nations in Canada and is even referred to in Canada's Constitution. It also laid the foundation for Britain to enter into treaties with First Nations. The National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations, Sean Atleo, said this anniversary is an opportunity to reflect and reset the relationship between the Crown and First Nations.
For 250 years, the laws and policies of federal governments have been paternalistic at best and assimilationist at worst. It's time to lay the groundwork so that we can achieve the change needed now. We must resolve the long-standing issues of First Nations control over our lands and our lives. This means honoring and implementing the treaties where they exist and where they do not, committing ourselves to a fair, just, and timely approach to resolving land issues.
The proclamation became a guide to all treaty making since 1763, but Atleo said the treaty relationships and aspirations about sharing the land, wealth, and resources of the country have not taken place. The proclamation issued by King George at the end of the Seven Years' War between Britain and France set out how the inhabitants of Quebec would be governed under British rule. It also recognized that Indigenous peoples in British North America had rights to the lands they occupied and promised to protect and not to molest them. Because of that promise, First Nations have viewed the proclamation as a bill of rights for Indigenous people in North America. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpenchuk.
The Wisconsin legislature is considering changes to a law that could soften rules on racially based mascots and logos in schools. WXPR's Ken Krall reports.
The bill would require a school district have at least 10% of the district's members support the change. The bill also puts the burden on the person filing the complaint to prove that the mascot or logo proved harmful and give a 120-day time limit to the process. The Great Lakes Intertribal Council is an umbrella group for 12 Wisconsin Native American tribes. Its executive director, Michael Allen Sr., says this is an old issue with a new twist.
Well, attempts are made to retreat from simply appealing the mascot and logo law, the current substitute is only a little better than and continue to support stereotyping and marginalizing Native tribes.
Currently, if the Wisconsin school superintendent finds the use of the race-based nickname, logo, mascot, or team name promotes discrimination, pupil harassment, or stereotyping, the superintendent must order the school board to terminate its use of the image or team name within 12 months. Allen says in tough economic times, the legislature should concern itself with other issues. For National Native News in Rhinelander, Wisconsin, Ken Krall reporting.
As the first flu cases of the season hit the Southwest, health officials are encouraging people to get vaccinated, especially high-risk groups. Tristan Autone has more.
Each year, between 5 and 20% of the nation comes down with the flu, with thousands of hospitalizations and even deaths. Some of the highest risk populations are people of any age with chronic illnesses such as diabetes or lung disease, people over the age of 50, and Native Americans.
The American Indian Alaska Native population has been shown to be at risk of influenza-related complications and even to have higher death rates.
Joan Bomback is an epidemiologist with the New Mexico Department of Health.
There are some factors that are still being studied, and there's some hypotheses that are still being generated to understand it better, so it's not absolutely known what puts them at higher risk.
With New Mexico's native population at around 10%, officials are encouraging people to get vaccinated. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Autone.
In In October 2003, a statue of Sacagawea was dedicated at the U.S. Capitol. The Shoshone woman is famous for taking part in the Lewis and Clark expedition. The bronze statue given to Statuary Hall by North Dakota stands 8 feet tall and depicts Sacagawea with an infant on her back. The ceremony included Native drumming, singing, and dancing. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News Juno. I'm Joan Pardis. Jeff Brown is the engineer and producer of the show. He is running the board. As far as the weather, rest of today is cloudy, scattered rain showers with isolated thunderstorms and ice pellets. Temperatures steady around 48, southwest wind 10 to 20 miles an hour. Tonight, rain showers. Thursday, rain showers. Thursday night, rain. Friday night, rain. And then rain and clouds for the rest of this weather forecast. Okay, ice pellets were there. Oh, my goodness. Okay, a couple of public service announcements. Just want to let you know, if you haven't heard or seen, the downtown library elevator is done. So if you've been avoiding that library because of access, it is ready to go, and parking resumes to what it used to be, which is library parking on level one. Also, Three Musketeers at Thunder Mountain High School this weekend. So Saturday at 2 and 7 and Friday at 7 p.m. I heard it's a great show. Go out and support the Thunder Mountain High School Drama Department. Speaking of drama, Jeff Kirsch is here. He is the president of the Juno Douglas Little Theater, and he's also a columnist for The Empire and wears many other hats within the community. And he's here to talk about the 24-hour miracle that's going to be happening through the theater on October 18th and October 19th. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. I'm going to be talking about that and also about one of the events that we're having leading up to it, which is that directing workshop this weekend.
Okay. So the 24-hour miracle, let's start there and then we'll back out to the director's workshop.
Please, great. That would be great. So what is it? It is a 24-hour theater challenge, basically. There's four teams. Writer, director, actors, four teams. The writer, the topic is picked, literally, will be picked out of a hat, probably my hat. And then at 8 p.m. on the 18th, right?
And where is that?
That's not a thing that you'd want to go see or anything. But
oh,
yeah,
just
it's all
the
teams. It's all taking place at Rockwell upstairs. But anyway, the topic is picked. The writers then at 8 p.m. have 12 hours. They go home. They write their scripts. They have 12 hours. At 8 a.m., they deliver their scripts to their director and actor teams, who then have 12 hours to stage, rehearse, memorize, and then the curtain goes up at 8 p.m. on Saturday, and there'll be four original, brand-new, short plays, 10 to 15 minutes. The longest one has been about 20 minutes, but generally speaking, 12 hours is not an exceptionally long time, especially if you have to deal with printing and all that other stuff, so they tend to be about 10 to 15 minutes long.
Wow. That sounds, I've heard of it, but I didn't really know all the details. So at 8 o'clock on the 19th, the performances will be where?
The Rockwell upstairs.
Okay.
They're remodeling there, I guess, but the upstairs is open, and, we're having it there. We've held it in various places throughout town, and, we figured we'd give it a shot over there. So.
Wow. And you've written plays through this process before?
I have, yeah. I've actually, this will be the fifth time. I'm one of the four writers this year. That's really why I produce it, because I know that every year I will write one short play for this. In fact, actually, two of the plays actually have been at Last Frontier Theater Conference, and I still send them out to be rejected at playwriting conferences and stuff. So it's like a gift that keeps on giving. No, but a lot of people actually, people from Perseverance and people from the Capital City Weekly and, just regular people, not regular people, but people who do not write or do theater professionally, come and do this. Like, we had one year, we had a whole bunch of people from the brewery, you know, and it's a lot of fun. It's a really fun thing. And this year, we've got our writers and our directors, and it really, the actors are who really make it, because a lot of times, I know for me, I like to leave it open and be like, okay, here you go. You guys are going to do this in this particular scene, because I like to sleep a little bit. so, like, I'm like, all right, well, I'll do it in 6 hours and take a nap. So
it seems a little rough from 8 p.m. to 8 a.m. to write a play.
Well, you know, yeah, but also it's really quiet. I have little kids. I don't know. I'm sure everyone has. You know, the daytime is loud and there's lots of stuff happening. You get phone calls and this happens and that happens and that. But, like, at night, it's quiet. There's nothing happening. It's dark. I mean, yes, you do lose a night of sleep, but that actually that weekend happens to be – Now I'm going to – it's a holiday, right? It's a state holiday.
Oh, you're right. It's Alaska Day.
Yeah, it is Alaska Day. So it is a three-day weekend, so you would have, like, the day to – you know, if you wanted to act, we're definitely – people are – we're definitely looking for actors. And it's a great thing, too, if you don't have much time, because it only takes 12 hours.
Right. So let's talk – well, first of all, as far as losing sleep, creative process is taxing, so that's the way it goes. So one night is not going to really harm anybody long term.
No.
But let's talk about Juno Douglas, the little theater.
Yeah.
How you're supporting people in the process. You had workshops last week, and now you have a director's workshop this Saturday?
Right. First we had a writing workshop, which I did, and then last weekend we had an acting workshop, which was led by Frank Attas, who works here as well, and he's co-producing the show this year. And then this weekend we are doing directing, so we're kind of hitting the third of the trifecta, acting, directing, writing. So this weekend directing, and it's going to be led by Brandon Demery, who is currently in Guard of Carnage at Perseverance Theater. So we're really lucky to have him doing it. It's totally free. It's at the Nugget Mall. It's from 1 to 3. I just figured I'd get that out there before I forget to say when and where it is.
Okay, that sounds great. So, and then are you looking for teams for the 24-hour miracle?
Definitely are, yeah. We have actually – so what we usually do is we get the writers and directors beforehand, because if they're actually very important to have them solidified. Like, you know what I mean? Just to be like, you understand what the – it's, you know – you know
you
what you're getting
the fine
into.
Print.
Yeah, and so far we've only had one team in 6 years. This is going to be the sixth year, but so 5 years, four teams, 20. So there have been 20 plays. Only one time has a script not appeared in the next morning. So, you know, if an actor doesn't show up, you can, like, double cast. You can – I mean, we've conscripted – sometimes people have called their kids to come down. Like, they're at high school. Like, I'm going to tell my 15-year-old kid to come down, and, like – I literally on the phone, like, oh, I'll give you $20 if you come down and, like, be the part of the delivery boy or whatever. And I actually one year had the pizza delivery guy. He was in my play just because we, you know, that's part of the fun of it.
You needed that guy.
Yeah, exactly. and he was really excited, actually. He's like, oh, my God, this is great. Like, he had just moved to town, and so he met a whole bunch of people, and I let him sing on stage. Like, there was a little part of singing, and he was really excited because he was a singing pizza boy.
Who knew?
I guess I don't think I haven't seen him around. But anyway, he wound up stealing. He stole his scene. But anyway.
So if you're thinking of acting, anybody can do it.
Yeah, if you're thinking of acting, anybody can do it, and it's not a whole lot of time. But yes, the workshop, though, if you are interested in directing, just even in general, and theater, this is going to be a great opportunity to have a close personal workshop with Brandon Demery. You know, and even if you aren't going to be directing in this 24-hour miracle, we definitely are looking to cultivate a local theater scene involving directors, writers, and actors, all three. You know, in that way, Juno Douglas Little Theater really is committed to being a truly community theater, like, all the way around.
Speaking of Juno Douglas Little Theater being a true community theater, you said before we went on it's like 50-something years old?
Yeah, it was founded in 1961, and yeah, so that would make it, what, like 53?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, it did a variety of different things. I think its first show was Our Town, I guess, and then it also did some cabaret-style stuff and this and that, and then it was recently reinvented and reinvigorated, and then it kind of fell into a period of, I mean, the people who are on the board all had kids or grandchildren, and so we all kind of for like 2 years or so, sort of. We're like, we don't have, and now we're all sort of back.
Well, it sounds like a vibrant board, and
we're starting to do stuff again, and this is like a really great way to kind of kick it off. We're gonna try and do some stuff in the springtime, and you know, have readers' theater and all kinds of things. If people in this town are really interested in doing theater, and you know, if you're intimidated by doing a bigger show, or if you don't have the time to do a bigger thing, like, that's what we're trying to enable people to be able to do it.
Okay, so if people are interested, let's say they're, oh, I'm interested in the director's workshop, but I can't go, but I do want to get in touch with the theater, how do they get in touch?
Yeah, so a good place would be our website, which is JD Little Theater, and that is theaterre.org.
Okay.
Or you can find Juno Douglas Little Theater on Facebook. You got both of those.
Okay, great. Yep. So to recap, there's a director's workshop from 1 to 3 at the Nugget Mall.
Free.
This Saturday. And then the 24-hour miracle, it starts on Alaska Day in the evening, but the performances are October 19th at 8 p.m. Above Rockwell.
Above Rockwell.
And if you're an actor and interested in participating, should they get in contact with you?
Same deal. You can go to the jdlittletheater.org website, or admin@jdlittletheater.org, or again on Facebook, and you just, you know, send something there saying you want to be on it. We will it's monitored. You know, and we're definitely looking for actors. The more people who are actors, the fewer lines everyone has to memorize. So it works out really well for everyone in that way.
With 12 hours. So you have like a 5-minute tech and then you go.
Yeah. You
know? All right, Jeff, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me on.
Support comes from Hearthside Books, presenting a reading of Aaron McKittrick's book, Small Feet, Big Land, Adventure, Home, and Family on the Edge of Alaska, along with the premiere of filmmaker Greg Chaney's A Life on Ice, which chronicles their trip, October 10th, 7 p.m. at Centennial Hall. Details at hearthsidebooks.com.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News Juno. I'm Joan Pardis. Jeff Brown's the engineer and producer of the show. We were just chatting with Jeff Kirst from the Juno Douglas Little Theater, and we were talking a little bit about Reader's Theater, which is not what's coming up. They have the 24-hour miracle coming up, and that's next weekend. But I have a PSA here that the Alaska State Museum will host a Reader's Theater performance of the real story of the sinking of the Princess Sophia on Saturday, October 19th at 2 p.m. The event is free, and admission to the museum is free during this event. So that is happening next weekend as well. And then the Juno Douglas Little Theater, their performances of their 24-hour miracles, 12 hours to write, 12 hours to rehearse, is at 8 o'clock above Rockwell on the 19th as well. And here in the studio, we have Sally Smith, Rebecca Albert, and Rosie Humphrey from Juno Lyric Opera about their holiday pop concert. And there's going to be a lot more rehearsal involved with this, I think. Hi, Sally.
Oh, this is fun rehearsal, though, Joan. You know, and we don't want people to get thrown by the name opera. This isn't the kind of pops where we're singing Carmen at Christmas. This is where we're singing Bing Crosby and Rosemary Clooney and Joy to the World. Really music that everybody is familiar with and can sing along.
That sounds great. So this is the Holiday Pops Concert.
It is.
And that's going to take place on December 7th and December 8th.
Yes.
And when do rehearsals start?
We're going to start rehearsals on October 20th. That's Sunday. And we'll rehearse on Sundays and Tuesdays. Sundays from 3 to 5:30 at Northern Light United Church. Tuesdays at Thunder Mountain High School from 6:45 to 9. And these are designed to be fun. I call this a pickup choir. It's you don't even have to be able to read music. We get compact discs made for alto, tenor, and bass. We figure sopranos sing melody, they'll pick it up. But they don't like that either. They want CDs too, maybe some year. But this is our sixth annual. We've ranged in size from 50 singers to 70 singers. It's designed to come get in the Christmas spirit and be a gift to the community of Juno.
Aww.
We find it, yeah, I love it, Rosie. It's a gift to those of us who participate. We get to meet new people. We get to sing songs that we know and like and maybe learn a few new songs. But we also get to spark that holiday spirit in people who don't have this kind of chorus available to them any longer at Christmas.
Yeah.
Times have changed.
That sounds great. So what is the requirement? Let's say I'm interested, and quite frankly, I can't sing. But let's say, but I'd like to. Let's say I'm interested. Is there like an age minimum? Like, do you have to be so anybody?
No. We want to make sure that this isn't a child care center.
Mm-hmm.
If children come, we want them to be engaged and sing, so that it's fair to the adults who come for adult time. But if children want to come and sing, we've had children and they've been great, so they're welcome. The idea behind this is just to come, learn music, have fun together. There's no audition. If you're not comfortable learning a part, you get a compact disc. You can learn it on your own time. I don't take attendance. I cry a lot over that in the last 2 weeks before the concert because I'm sure it will never come together. And every year for 6 years, it has come together. So I'm trusting and having faith. But I do not ask people to report in, and nobody sits there with a pad taking information. The next question would be, and how much does it cost me? We don't have a fee. It's not a workshop. I'm a credentialed music teacher. Okay, you get that. But again, it's to just come and sing. And we do ask if you have the means that you help us pay for the music with a free will donation.
Okay.
But there's no charge.
All right. So, Sally, you're the director of this project.
I'm the director.
And Rebecca, you are the producer, Rebecca Albert, right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. So what are the professorial tasks for something like this? Kind of herding everybody to where they need to go?
Oh, the scheduling, just mainly scheduling, I think. Keeping it all coordinated, getting all the rehearsal sites lined up and then the performance sites lined up. So this year we're going to be at Chapel by the Lake and then at the Jack. So Chapel by the Lake on Saturday night and the Jack on Sunday afternoon.
That's December 7th and
December 7th and 8th.
Okay. So I have a question for you, producer and director. Before you perform in December, will you come back on my show and bring a couple of singers?
We'll be happy to come back.
We can do that?
Sure, we can probably bring a couple of singers.
We would be very happy to do something like that.
That would be great. So, Rosie, you are the executive director of the Juno Lyric Opera, Rosie Humphrey.
Yes, I am.
And you say that this is the gift to the community.
Yes, so this is my first year with the Juno Lyric Opera, but I've been involved with Holiday Pops a couple times as accompanist, and it's really nice to just I remember the first rehearsal that I ever went to, and I was walking in to fill in for the other accompanist because I also play piano, and it was such a different atmosphere of a rehearsal because there are people in there that I've never seen involved with other music productions in town but could sing these awesome arranged song, and Sally as the director, it's just fun. They always have fun. It's an evening where you kind of relax. It's not work. And then you go home singing Christmas songs. So what's better than that during
what's
December?
What's not to love?
It sounds terrific. You know, add in some holiday cookies and it's like heaven.
Well, I want to say on behalf of both Rebecca and Rosie, it doesn't happen without them, because despite the fact this is envisioned as a gift to the community, there are a lot of logistics, and it costs money to put it on. We don't go out and get grants. We don't have advertising or income. This is truly grassroots, always has been. We keep the ticket costs low by just free will support, and that's music borrowed from the high school, from churches. I try to do a couple of arrangements myself, and as a result, the tickets for those who attend are kept at $10 for adults, $8 for seniors and students. So, but we do have costs, and they are the ones that do that negotiating and make it happen and just handle all those little details that are important to a finished product.
Absolutely. Performances, two performances, 50 to 70 performers, that's a lot of work.
Risers, chairs, rehearsal halls, getting the bills paid, transporting the music. I would say taking attendance, but we don't do that.
All righty. Well, and before we close up, because we're out of time here, Rosie, besides this essential piece of the holiday spirit in Juneau, is there anything else we should be looking out on the horizon for the Juneau Lyric Opera?
So November 2nd, we have Jay Query. He's a soloist in town who sings tenor. He's having a recital at Aldersgate Church on November 2nd at 7:30. Please come to that. As well as our Midwinter Vocal Festival is happening the end of December through January 4th, I think.
December 27th through January 4th.
And then you can also look forward to our spring gala that's coming up in the spring. We're also doing a musical, off-Broadway musical called I Love You, You're Perfect Now Change. And those auditions will be in January 25th for production happening the first 2 weekends in April. So
Wow. Lots of stuff. We'd just like to
finish off with some contact information.
I was just about to add that.
Yes. Okay. So if you're looking to sign up for Holiday Pops, you can email me, Rosie, which our email for JLO is director@junoopera.org. Again, that's director@junoopera.org. You can also call us at 563-2742.
Aria.
Yeah. Yeah.
523 or 563?
563. I never call that number anymore on my phone.
563. I have
586. 586, Aria. Thank you.
I never call that number. New number.
586, Aria. Thank you.
586, Aria.
So, JunoOpera.org, director@JunoOpera.org, or 586-ARIA.
Aria.
And if you know me, you can always get in touch with me, too.
Mm-hmm. That sounds great. That was Sally talking. All right, we'll see you back in December with a little preview.
Great.
Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 9th of October, 2013. It's the birthday of Jill Kerr Conway, born in New South Wales, Australia, 1934. Father was a sheep rancher. She grew up in isolation on a sheep ranch far, far from town. She became a sheep hand on the ranch, checking fences and prodding sheep from one paddock to another. Went off to college, studied history, and then spent 10 years as the president of Smith College, first woman to hold that position. She's the author of The Road from Kurrain and A Woman's Education. Jill Kerr Conway, who said, "You never know what you'll want to write until it starts writing itself in your head." It was on this day the Washington Monument was opened to the public. It had been 40 years in the building from 1848, opened on this day 1888. At the time, 550 feet high, it was the tallest building in the world. It's the birthday of James Howe McClure, born 1939, Johannesburg, South Africa, a journalist and a crime novelist. He wrote a series of crime novels in the Kramer and Zondi series set in South Africa, two detectives, one Afrikaner and one Zulu, and then wrote a couple of nonfiction books about police in Liverpool and police in San Diego. James Howe McClure, who said, "I long, long, long ago thought the finest thing to be is an entertainer, with tons of funny things to say. If people find lots more in my work, that's great. But if they just read and have a good laugh, that's fine for me." It's the birthday of the Irish poet Ciarán Carson, 1948, in Belfast. Still lives there. His parents only spoke Irish at home, and the Carson children learned English playing in the streets with other children. Author of many books, including Belfast Confetti and Shamrock Tea. Ciarán Carson, who said there's a whole language out there, and one's role as a writer is to stumble around in it. And it's the birthday of the composer Camille Saint-Saëns, born in Paris, 1835. Wrote 13 operas, of which the most famous, really the only one much performed, was Samson and Delilah. Toured frequently, playing his piano concertos all over Europe and the United States, accompanied by a servant and his pet dogs. Saint-Saëns, who said, "I like good company, but I like hard work even better." Here's a poem for today by Lawrence Ferlinghetti, from A Coney Island of the Mind, number 20. The penny candy store beyond the L is where I first fell in love with unreality. Jelly beans glowed in the semi-gloom of that September afternoon. A cat upon the counter moved among the licorice sticks and Tootsie Rolls and Oh Boy Gum. Outside, the leaves were falling as they died. A wind had blown away the sun. A girl ran in, her hair was rainy, her breasts were breathless in the little room. Outside, the leaves were falling, and they cried, "Too soon, too soon." A poem by Lawrence Ferlinghetti, number 20, from A Coney Island of the Mind, published by New Directions, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. And by Lumosity. Lumosity.com's daily online workouts are designed to improve memory and attention and are dedicated to helping people feel sharper, think faster, and remember more. More at Lumosity.com. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Now I'm covered.
Now we're covered.
Now for the first time, you can be covered with a quality health plan from the new Health Insurance Marketplace, part of the healthcare law. It's where brand name companies offer plans you can compare side by side, and it's the only place to get lower monthly payments. So if you have an accident, get sick, or just need a checkup, I'm covered. Enroll now at the Health Insurance Marketplace at healthcare.gov. Sponsored by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services in cooperation with your State Broadcasters Association and this station.
Hello, you are listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News Juno. I'm Joan Pardis. Jeff Brown is the engineer and producer of the show, and we just heard a spot about healthcare. And here in the studio, we have Crystal Borland, who is an employee of the United Way of Anchorage and working with NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental
Illness.
Thank you. I didn't know mental illness here in Juno. And Doug Gutenberg, who is the executive director of NAMI here. And Crystal is here to be the navigator of the new Health Care Act in the Southeast. Is that correct, Crystal?
That's correct, Joan.
Okay. So lots of talk about the Affordable Care Act, also known as ACA, and health enroll. There's so many different names for it, but the reality is we have a new insurance plan federally. And what does that mean to people who live in Southeast Alaska?
Right. Yeah, there's a little buzz going around. So the exchange opened, or the marketplace as it's called, on October 1st. Alaska has not partnered with the state, or it's not a state partnership with the federal government. So we're using healthcare.gov to enroll in the marketplace. And when I say we, I mean people that are uninsured, underinsured, or just curious what other health plans are out there. So to enroll in this new marketplace.
Okay, so there's this website that people go to, and what is your role to help people? Because there's so much information. It's a new program. It's programs. There's many different facets of it. Anything that you roll out nationally that's new has so many different facets to it, and I'm sure people are really confused. So what is your role to help people specifically in Southeast Alaska?
Well, my role is to help people sift through the information and help break it down. So I'm providing information and assistance for anyone who's getting ready to enroll or has questions about enrollment in the marketplace. And then I'm also going to be on the ground doing a lot of outreach. So providing education to businesses, to organizations, just to the general public about what the Affordable Care Act, aka Obamacare, means for people here in Alaska.
Okay. And so you're really going to be like one-on-one, like people could call you up and ask you a question. It's not like you have to drive them into classes or webinars or seminars.
I'm doing direct enrollment, so direct client services as well as outreach. So I'll be working with people from anywhere just as to one question about Obamacare to all the way down to doing the entire enrollment process. So starting the application from beginning to end with them.
Okay, that sounds great. So how do people get a hold of you?
So right now, let's first talk about the website. So right now, healthcare.gov is still glitching. So if you've been paying attention to the news, we're still waiting for people to get through. It was promising the other night I was able to get through the account part, but there's still not access to go through the whole process. So without that, I'm not really able to assist people in enrollment right now, but I can certainly answer questions, and I encourage people to find information for themselves. You can still go to healthcare.gov and look at the Learn section. There's a lot of great information. So I encourage people to do that, to inform themselves. And then to get in touch with me, you can email me or you can also call Alaska 211. So if you dial 211, it's a United Way program. There are trained information and referral specialists, and they'll get you in contact with a local person, whether that be a navigator such as myself or CACs, which are Certified Application Counselors.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
That's 211. And then do you have an email address?
So my email, you want me to go ahead and spell it out?
Sure.
Okay. So my email is C Borland. My last name is Borland at ak.org. My phone lines will be up the early next week, so I'm not going to give that out this moment in time. But NAMI Juno website is going to have a special section, and in hopefully the next few days we'll have my contact info in there.
Okay, so let's talk about that, and then we're going to go back to the healthcare. So United Way of Anchorage received funds for you to be the navigator in Southeast.
That's correct.
Okay. And then NAMI is the host organization here in Southeast. Is that correct?
Correct. We're part of a coalition of nonprofits around the state, and we are the one representing Southeast Alaska. So in our case, we offer to house the navigator. So we have an office where Crystal will be working, and that's at 9000 Glacier Highway 201, although we ask people to make appointments, not to do drop-ins. But we've been involved with this coalition since the spring, and we're very involved in outreach efforts. For instance, there is a group called Champions for Coverage, a volunteer group, and if people want to be involved in doing outreach, and even they can get trained as certified assistant counselors. Is that the name? CACs.
CACs.
A lot of acronyms here.
Mm-hmm.
So they can actually help people enroll as well, but they should contact NAMI Juno, and we can get them information about the ACA. It's the Champions for Coverage Group or Outreach, ACA Outreach.
Okay, speaking of acronyms, let's talk a little bit about NAMI. So what NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness.
Right.
And tell us a little bit about your role here in the community.
Well, NAMI is involved with this. We're involved with support, education, and advocacy for those living with mental illness. But the reason we're involved with this is that the coverage protections brought on by this law provide tremendous benefits for people living with mental illness. People living with mental illness and their families have really gone through terrible problems with insurance in previous years, pre-existing conditions, issues with amount of coverage provided, issues with access to coverage, issues with mental health parity. I can go into all of them, but we don't have time. So NAMI, once the legislation was passed, NAMI got involved nationally in advocating, in helping get the law implemented, and that's what we're doing. And that's why we got involved in the coalition and are now providing the office space for Crystal to do her work.
Okay, so it's a natural partnership.
Yes.
Because the people that rely on you can be impacted greatly.
Right, and it's not just, of course, this is for people who don't have mental illness, who have
of
other
course.
Health issues, or just who want it, you know, having basic health coverage and affordable and accessible health care coverage is a very important principle that, that we support.
Yeah, I'm going to piggyback on that and just say that even those who aren't insured right now and are going to be shopping on the marketplace, for everyone to know that since 2010 when the Affordable Care Act rolled out, there has been reforms taking place. And one of those that Dove just spoke on, pre-existing conditions. So whether you have a health insurance plan either in or out of this new marketplace, as of January 1st, 2014, that is no longer a barrier to you getting coverage. So if you lose your job-based insurance at some point and you go to get insurance elsewhere, that is no longer an issue. And I just think that that is huge and such a key part of the Affordable Care Act. And I just wanted to mention it.
That's great. So I understand that people could contact you directly through email, through 2-on-1. We'll have a phone number, which you'll get out through your outreach and so on and so forth. And maybe
correct.
We'll have you back because this is definitely a multi-pronged campaign and lots of information that we can't possibly cover in 10 or 15 minutes. But I understand that you're also hosting an event. Is that true?
That's correct. Well, NAMI Juno is, along with Bartlett Regional Hospital, has a monthly forums on mental health and wellness. It's called Inside Passages. And we're having a special event Monday, November 4th at Aldersgate United Methodist Church. It's going to be a special town hall. So this is for everyone. This is for the public to come learn about the new marketplace and health coverage and the changes that are taking place. And it's also going to be talking about Affordable Care Act. We're going to have representatives from Enroll Alaska, which are agents and brokers helping get people insured. And it's also going to have a representative from ANTHC, as well as myself. So we're going to be on a panel. We're going to have lots of times for Q&A. So if you're curious and you just want to gain some knowledge on this subject, it's going to be a great place to come and get that information. So Monday, November 4th.
Okay, that's great. So that sounds like many different opportunities to learn about this.
Mm-hmm.
How did you learn? How did you learn the tasks about your job?
Right. In terms of training or the job itself?
Both.
Both. Okay. Well, I've been volunteering with NAMI Juno for about a year, I would say, and I helped Dove.
A great volunteer, by the way.
Helped him kick off the Inside Passages program, which has been going on for a while now. And so that's how I caught wind of this position. I've worked previously in nonprofits. I have, I'd say, a passion for providing information to people. And so that's how I got involved.
Okay. And what about the training for this new job? Because obviously every navigator is new because this is all brand new. So did you have a lot of training? Is it ongoing?
Yeah. Yeah, well, hopefully ongoing, yes. It was a 20-hour training that I took, and it was online modules. And this is nationally, so there are navigators all over the nation. Some states that started to do their partner exchange, maybe they call them something different. But, yes, we all went through this training, 20 hours, and, of course, just immersing yourself in all the information that is out there.
Yeah.
Training in itself.
I bet. So if you're just joining us, we're talking with Crystal Borland, who is the new navigator of the new healthcare system. She's going to be based in Southeast Alaska. She's here to help Southeast Alaskans. So it's specific to our needs here. And we have some unique needs because the state did not participate I'm not exactly even knowing what – I know what it is, but I don't know the exact word. What
they
is
didn't
it?
Partner with the federal government in the marketplace.
So it's partner. Okay, there was that was the word that I was looking for. So, so Crystal is here, and she's based out of the NAMI offices out in the Valley, and there's an event November 4th, and you could reach her right now through 211. Just dial 211, which is Alaska's 411 for nonprofits and resources. And then you could also reach her at cborland, B-O-U-R-L-A-N-D, at ak.org. Okay.
And on the NAMI website, www.namijuno.org, you'll find information also about the phone numbers and access and the event on November 4th.
That's a lot easier. So NAMI's got all the information that you need about this. Okay, well, we look forward to having you back on the show and learning a little bit more when maybe we have some more time. But welcome, and thanks for doing what you're doing.
All right, thanks for listening, everyone.
Okay.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note.
Can you name that tune? Here's a hint. Carmen Miranda, adorned with her signature fruit basket of a hat, danced and sang this lively samba alongside Groucho Marx in the 1947 movie Copacabana. The song is Tico Tico no Fubá, and like Carmen Miranda, came to us from Brazil. Believe it or not, the song is about a bird. The Portuguese lyrics tell the story of the tico-tico, a local name for the rufous-collared sparrow. The rufous-collared sparrow is a handsome, familiar backyard bird found through much of Latin America. And like so many birds, tico-tico was named for its song. Back to the lyrics. It seems the bird with the musical name, Tico Tico, keeps coming back to the singer's yard to dine on her cornmeal piled in a backyard granary. There are plenty of earthworms and fruit to eat, but Tico Tico prefers her dwindling supply of cornmeal. She offered it birdseed and let the cat out to chase it, but to no avail. Tico Tico loves her cornmeal. So whenever you hear this memorable samba, think of that persistent little sparrow atop a pile of cornmeal. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
This is Bob Babble babbling on the Street Reporter here outside the White House after he had another day of the partial government shutdown, talking with bystanders who are standing by with their thoughts about the current situation.
Help!
I see. And you, sir, where do you think all this is heading?
We're on the eve of destruction.
Oh, it's Secretary of State John Kerry. What's your position, sir?
We can work it out.
Well, what's it like finding revenue to run the government? And you must be one of the furloughed workers. What's your plan of action? Excuse me, Mr. Speaker of the House, John Boehner. What are your thoughts about negotiations?
I've got no expectations.
And how long do you think all this will take?
Wait.
Well, Senator Ted Cruz, what's your plan of action?
Going to rock around the park tonight.
Well, look, it's President Obama. Mr. President, do you say you want to negotiate?
Why is everybody always picking on me?
Well, it looks like it might be a long process. And what are you waiting for, Mr. President?
I'm just waiting on a friend.
What do you think it all comes down to?
Money.
This has been Bob Babble babbling on the Street Reporter reporting from outside the White House.
Support for this program comes from Balloons by Night Moods, now offering custom-made candy bouquets and candy cakes for birthdays and special occasions. More information at 523-1099.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon. We just heard a special report from Bob Babble. I am Joan Pardis. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. It is October 9th. And in the studio with me right now is John Garvey of Ever Electric. And he's been asked to come in to tell us what's going on Egan Drive, because there's a lot of things going on at Egan Drive. So hi, John. Thanks for coming in.
Hi there. Thanks for having us.
So what is the project then? What are you guys doing?
Well, we're going to be standing 148 light post from Fred Meyer's all the way to Aurora Harbor.
Okay. So was it, I seem to recall that there were lights on Egan before, but were some of them out or?
No, they're not out. They're just places in between that are very dark. Most of the intersections have lights, but the main runs are not lit up, and that's what we'll be doing.
Okay. How long will it take you?
Well, we started on the 1st of this month, and we'll be going for the first phase until weather permits us. And the process that we're doing now is everyone's stopping or slowing down to view the crane who's driving the support members for the poles. And we'll be driving, like I said, 148 of them, both directions, inbound and outbound. And so it'll all be lit up.
Wow, that's
and duration for this is, like I said, weather permitting. We're hoping to the 15th, maybe of next month.
Oh, wow.
That's pushing it, you know.
Okay.
But when things start getting slick and snow starts to fall, we'll pull off until the second phase, which will start, weather permitting, in March.
Okay. And how long does it take to put up a pole?
Well, the pilings are taking us about 30 minutes each to drive. We're driving twice as many as we expected, which is good. Then we have to weld caps on each one of them. Then we're doing the other portion of it. We're boring underground because there's a whole bunch of vivacious species. And so if we had to excavate, we'd have to excavate a tremendous amount of areas that have this vivacious species that takes extra care. And the boring so far that we've been doing at Fred Meyer's and Vanderbilt are being very successful. They're going, and in fact, one of our bores is clean under the Twin Lakes. And then we'll bore from light post and to our main power sources and our load centers and connect it all up. And hopefully, like I said, March will start. June 15th, we're hoping to finish.
Wow. It sounds like a big job. Is it a big job or... I mean, to me, not that I know much about construction.
It might be a big job for Juno. I mean, it's big in the fact that it's on Egan Drive and 55
visible.
Miles an hour to 65, and people just don't slow down all the time. So
right. So people have to be careful. So there's also, isn't there like double fines in a construction zone?
There's double fines. We haven't changed the speed limit, and we want the traffic to flow, and so our traffic control systems are set up special for each intersection and for every division, and we've lit it up with arrow lights, and we have huge tapers, which are large barrels, and then our cones that give us our buffer zones, and we just ask that merge quickly. I mean, when you see our mile sign down, right lane close ahead, start thinking about merging then, so when you get to the light, you're not trying to cut in, and that's where our accidents happen. That and people viewing what's going on, and then the people behind it not slowing down, and we've had a couple close calls there. No accidents yet, thank goodness, but please know that we're there, and we don't want anyone to get hurt. Safety is our thing.
Oh, absolutely, because I talked about, you know, double fines, but the reality is if somebody gets hurt, that the double fine is money, the rest is life and limb.
That's right.
How many people are on the job?
We have right now about a 5-man crew from North Pacific Erectors who are driving the piles for us, and they'll be welding the caps also. And then we have a 6-man electric crew, and then our traffic control support team and our SWEP support team.
Okay. Well, what is SWEP?
SWEP is another division of our water, stormwater pollution prevention plan. And it's just part of the game where we don't want any of our borings or our tailings or our excavations or anything to go into any of our supporting lakes and rivers and streams and culverts, whatever you have.
Right. So. Okay. So is there anything else we should be looking out for before? I'm assuming that your team is only working during daylight hours. Is that true?
We have cut it down to daylight hours just because of the situation that it's in. If we did it at dark, it would be no way. So we're keeping it from usually on the inbound, which is from the valley to town. We cannot be on the road until 9 a.m. And that's when I start setting up the traffic control. We're usually done by about 9:40, And that's when our cranes and our crews get out there to start. We can work till about 4 o'clock, and then it gets unsafe, so we pull it down. On the outbound from town, we can start early in the morning, but we have to be off the road by 4 o'clock. And so those are our times of operation,
and,
yeah.
And those hours are only going to get shorter, obviously.
Yeah, they're dropping 5 to 7 minutes a day, so
right.
It depends if we have sun, which...
We had this morning.
Well, we had a little taste, didn't we?
We had a little this morning.
We call those sucker holes. So.
Yeah, that was a good sucker hole because then it got really nasty. But anyway, is there anything else we should know? Just, you know, the common Joe and Jane driving on Egan.
You know, just to be aware that we're out there is the main thing. That's what I think is not only to inform you what we're doing now, but if you want to view us, go to the side roads and view us and... I on both the Schwepp boards, I've got a 24-hour phone number. You can call me anytime, and I'll inform you what we're doing. And just keep the traffic flowing and be safe.
Okay,
and
great.
Watch out for all us guys out there. And
absolutely.
We're watching out for you.
Do you have that number?
I do.
Okay. You want to share it?
723-9926.
Okay, so that's if you have any questions about the project, but it sounds like it's not a short-term project. It's not going to be for a couple of days and gone. It's going to be there until it gets really nasty or until those lights get up.
Yeah, it's going good, though. It's going really good. So everyone seems to be happy at DOT, and we hope that once it's all done, everyone will be lit up and happy.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
All right, thank you for coming in, John.
Thank you.
Hello, you've been listening to Juno Afternoon, and you still are. My name is Joan Partis. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. So earlier today, the weather forecast said something about ice pellets, but the updated one doesn't include anything about ice pellets. Tonight, rain showers, diminishing late, patchy fog, late lows 34 to 40, southwest winds 5 to 15 miles an hour. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, patchy fog in the morning, Thursday night rain, Friday night rain, and so on and so forth, rain and mostly cloudy. Thank you for joining us. If there's anything that you particularly liked, you could listen to it again tonight at ktoo.org or anytime. Anything that you're listening to on the radio station, you could listen to online as well. Thank you for listening. Have a great day. Okay, I'm back again. It's Joan. Tomorrow, Shauna Strasser will be on the show, and she will be chatting about an organization effort about the Daughter of the American Revolution chapter in Juneau with guest Regina Fallis. William Todd Hunt will be here to highlight this weekend's Juneau Symphony concerts, and Nancy DeCherney will be here with Arts Up. That, Writer's Almanac, Music and More, tomorrow at 3. Capacete, barra de pilar. As ideias em ordem. Repensar. Quebrar a cabeça, reflexão e lesão. Pro sangue ter pra onde subir.
Sangue bom.
Pro porrete saber onde descer.
Rota pra correr.
Pro monte tibetano meditar.
Vem.
Pra onde o gesto vai, a cabeça foi.
is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and I.